A Miami nonprofit says the county's public transit system is broken, and they believe they can fix it. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Transit Alliance, a Miami-based nonprofit, recently gave the county's public transit offerings failing grades. But they're not just going to hate all over public transportation. These folks have the opportunity to work with the county to completely redesign the bus system. And we're going to explain. We're going to talk to one of the nonprofit's leaders about what some of those solutions look like and their 24-hour bus ride tomorrow that you can follow along online. Also, budgets for the arts have been cut time and time again. And with those cuts, theater groups are hurting. So are short plays the future? We're going to look closer at the upcoming winter short series at the Arch Center. All of that today on Sundial. First, the news. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for joining us. Well, in a moment, we're going to talk about trying to solve our public transit problems in South Florida. We have plenty of them. But first, I want to give an update on an important story that we have been following very closely here at WLRN. The Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School Public Safety Commission is making its recommendations on how to make schools safer. This is the commission that was put together by the governor after the Parkland shooting on February 14th. The commission has been meeting once a month to discuss ways to protect students and staff from another shooter. Now, their final report is due in January, and it will go to the legislature. But they released a draft report this week, and they've been meeting in Tallahassee over the past few days. Pinellas County Sheriff Bob Gualtieri chairs that commission.
We need to know that bad things will happen anywhere and that no school is exempt. The idea that it can't happen to me is dangerous, and for those who don't take this seriously and genuinely, there should be consequences.
Now, the commission is reviewing these recommendations. Some of them include schools need to lock their doors from the inside. Classrooms should have, quote, hard corners where students can't be seen by people looking in. And some on the panel recommend more gun control measures. Now, one of the controversial discussions is centering on the part of the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas Act, which allows some teachers and staff to be armed. Now, we're going to have more on this story later today on All Things Considered. And, of course, it's part of the discussion tomorrow on the South Florida Roundup. Well, let's get back to transit. The nonprofit Transit Alliance wants to improve Miami-Dade County's public transit system. In hopes of fixing one sector of the transportation system, Transit Alliance launched their Better Bus Project. So the Miami-Dade County Commission has given them a very unique opportunity. Azar Shogley is the director of Transit Alliance, and Richard Hankins, a researcher at Transit Alliance. The two of them are going to embark on a very interesting 24-hour bus ride that starts tonight at 12 o'clock. He's going to explain what that's all about. Want to know what they're going to learn? Want to know what they have in store? What can they do to fix our system? Azar, it's always great to talk to you, man. Thanks so much for coming back, and you're going to tell us what you're going to do.
Yeah, it's great to be back. Thanks so much for having me.
Let's start with this. Because, and you brought it with you, but we were looking at this, for days. The Transit Alliance, you had a mobility scorecard, mm-hmm. a report card mm-hmm. for the county. And basically everything, Metro Rail, Metro Mover, buses, trolleys, everything, got a bad grade.
Yeah, it got a bad grade. So for people who aren't familiar with it, this is a physical piece of paper called the 2018 Mobility Scorecard. It's orange and it's very bright and it's very fun to look at. People can also get it online at transitalliance.miami/scorecard. And basically what it does is for the first time gives anyone in Miami, elected leaders, department officials, the everyday rider, this is the state, this is the health of our public transit system. How are we doing? And it's something that we all know in sort of a vague sense. Well, I don't think that works very well. Well, I think this could be better. But drilling down to the specifics, it sort of overviews for everyone. This is where we stand, and this is how we can get better.
How did you get to those grades? By the way, I love that you made it look pretty. My teachers never gave me a report card that looked pretty. If it didn't look good, it didn't look good. But I mean, how did you come to these grades for mm-hmm. all of these different systems?
Yeah, so everything in the scorecard is guided by data-driven research. So all the way from we had two transit fellows over the summer who rode the bus system for over 360 hours to public data that we access through the county to our own measurements of the Metrorail system. We measure every train arriving at Government Center every day and track its performance in real time. So all of the grades are based on data, essentially, and it's something that we can track year over year objectively.
Is there a silver lining? I don't want to just say that it's all terrible and let's just spend the next half hour dumping on public transit. Is there something good to point out here?
Yeah, that there is something good to point out, but it's important to recognize that a lot of people look at the mobility scorecard and say, wow, things are really bad. This is really bad. What do we do? I would say that the mobility scorecard is the most hopeful document we have because it's one that sort of sets a tone for progress and makes it very clear what needs to happen. There are good things happening. The county is renewing their bus fleet, for example. And more so than that, the county is willing to work with us to fix some of the issues in there. And that's a start.
Let's talk about buses. One of the solutions you're proposing here, revamping the bus system. This, again, the Better Bus Project. Just real quickly, tell us what that is.
So the last time we were on Sundial, we were in the middle of a project called Where's My Bus, which looked at what's happening with the bus system, top to bottom. What's reliability like? What's the route network like? What's their dedicated infrastructure like, etc.? That project ended with four solutions. One of those solutions was to redesign the bus system. We went to the county commission and said, hey, this is something we can do now. This is something that can benefit a lot of people. Let's do it. We met with the mayor. The mayor committed $250,000 to the project.
Mayor Carlos Jimenez. Yeah.
Mayor Carlos Jimenez, the county mayor. We are raising $250,000 to match those funds. And basically what this would do is over the span of 2 years, through an intense community-driven and data-driven process, overhaul the entire bus system top to bottom.
So, and part of this, and we're going to get to in a little bit too, is this part, I'd imagine, is this 24-hour thing that you're going to be doing,
mm-hmm.
riding the buses, but we'll get to that in a second, is I wanted to know, as you know it, from what you've gathered, what's one thing you could change right now about our bus system to make it more effective?
The main thing about our bus system is that, systematically speaking, it's not very easy to use. Let's say you have to take two buses, right? Let's say they both run at 30-minute frequencies. That means you have a bus coming every 30 minutes. Let's say you're getting from A to B. If you miss one bus, you've lost 30 minutes. Now, if you need to take two buses, you could lose, you know, even two or three buses, you could lose even more time. Those connections stack up. And we have a grid system in Miami, right? We're very unique. We're a flat place with a grid. This should sort of be easy to get from one place to another in terms of there should be a straight line. You make a connection. It's a high-frequency connection. That's not the bus system we have. We have a bus system that essentially, a lot of the routes just go in circles. It's like a big, colorful spaghetti ball. It's really hard for people to figure out, and it's really hard for people to use. And the core facet of a good bus system is it takes a lot of people to a lot of different places, and we don't have a system that does that.
All right, that's an interesting way to paint it. It looks like a big spaghetti ball. Why? Why do you know where the origins of this go? Why, how did we set up a bus system where buses are going in circles or loops?
The origin of the spaghetti ball, the big question. So a lot of our transportation planning decisions have been varied and strange. It's either like I want an elected official to be like, I want this bus route to go here to serve these people, but not taking into consideration necessarily data, service effectiveness, stuff like that. And over time, basically, all of these little adjustments add up to basically a spaghetti ball that gets more spaghetti. On top of that, we have 25 municipal trolley systems. Some of them run on the weekends. Some of them don't. Some of them are free. Some of them are not. Some of them run 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. Some of them take a lunch break. It's all over the board. And all of this fragmentation sort of has occurred over time. And there's never been a process where like, hey, can we start from a clean slate, evaluate what's working, evaluate what's not, and how to make a better bus system.
All right. And you, again, there's this unique relationship now that you're working with the county and the mayor, as you said, Mayor Jimenez has posted that $250,000 to help you. You have to match those funds and they will basically have you guys help them solve this problem, figure out a system to solve this problem. I want to get more into that. Also, this 24-hour challenge you guys have coming up. Again, talking with Azar Shogley, the director of Transit Alliance, and we're talking about our transit system. Find us on Facebook or WLRN, at WLRN Sundial, or on Twitter, and let us know your experience, you know, riding transit, riding the buses. As he said, does it feel like a big spaghetti ball? We'd love to hear from you. And we're going to come back here in just a moment and continue this conversation. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Let's get back to our conversation about public transit systems here in South Florida, specifically Miami. We've been talking with Azar Shogley, the director of Transit Alliance, and they had a report card basically giving failing grades to all the transportation systems that we have here, bus, train, and so forth. I just want to make a note, too, by the way, this week I've been taking the trains. From Kendall to downtown, I drive to the South Dade station, take the Metro Rail, and then I take the Metro Mover. It's been relatively pretty smooth for the most part.
Yeah.
I'm not really buying a lot of time, though.
Yeah.
But I've been told I do get to work a lot happier. So let me just say that. My coworkers,
is that working?
My coworkers have said, you seem a lot happier.
Yeah.
So let me just put that that way. I want to get to this 24-hour challenge that you guys have coming up. So starting tonight at 12 o'clock, you and your researcher from Transit Alliance, you're going to be riding buses 24 hours straight?
Yeah. We're going to be riding the whole, as far as we can get on the Miami-Dade County bus system for 24 hours continuously, midnight to midnight, and live streaming the entire thing on Twitter at TransitMIA, and people can also follow us at transitalliance.miami/marathon.
What are you going, I mean, what do you think you're going to get out of riding it for 24 straight hours?
So much, so much. I mean, okay, so if anyone wants to understand what's going on with the bus system, you kind of have to be in it. You really need to understand what's going on. And more so than that, you really need to understand what riders are dealing with. I think everyone in Miami, whether they realize it or not, is connected to the bus system. People sitting in traffic right now, you might be right next to a bus. You probably know someone who takes the bus to work. You probably know someone who's tried it out. You might even be curious about it. But the thing is, we have a large bus system. It's nearly 800 vehicles, 58 million rides a year. 2 out of 3 transit trips are on a bus. We're all connected to it. And I think to see the entire system over the span of 24 hours, midnight to midnight, is to really experience it firsthand, but not only for us, but to sort of share that story and share that experience on this is what the Miami-Dade bus system is like.
And you're going to be riding throughout the entire county.
Throughout the entire county. We're going to try to go all the way from Florida City in the south to Aventura Mall in the north, and let's see how far west we get.
By the way, I was just laughing a second ago because you're right. Yeah, if you're driving in your car, usually you're, you know, racing around buses as they're constantly stopping.
Yeah.
Let's come back to this relationship with the county, because so Mayor Jimenez makes his contribution of $250,000. Mm-hmm. You have to match it. And if you can, which by the way, I mean, you've raised a lot of money in a very short period of time.
Yeah, we've raised close to $100,000 in less than a month, I think.
And so you match it, and then what happens next? What is this relationship?
So this relationship is a really special one. And just to go over a bit about what the project would do, essentially. So if we look at the time horizon for like what's going to happen with transit in the next 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 years, this is sort of the only project where in the next 2 years we'll see tangible, real improvement to the transit system. And basically, Mayor Jimenez recognizes that and recognizes that we have something that we can fix now that just makes sense to do because, as I said, 2 out of 3 trips are on the bus.
What do you think it is? Is it more buses? Is it newer buses? Is it, you know, how we train the drivers? Is it, you know, what the routes are? How do we, I'm just trying to think, like, what's something we could do right now?
It's a lot of things, but to go to your experiences, right? You said you don't save a lot of time. And the thing is, in order for a bus to be competitive with a car, it needs dedicated infrastructure. It needs its own lane. And that's not hard to do. That doesn't cost billions of dollars. It doesn't even cost millions of dollars.
All right. So this goes, real quickly, this goes to the debate over, you know, building extended metro rail, rail down south. Uh-huh. And the county decided, no, we're going to have this rapid bus transit instead. Mm-hmm. What do you think of that?
Well, what's happening with the smart plan is an entire different story in a different time frame. We're talking things that are at least 5, possibly 10 years down the road, and projects that, frankly, aren't even funded. We're making decisions on transit expansion, and we're all fighting about modes. But get down to the practicality of where's the money to pay for any of it, BRT, rail, etc. We can have these conversations, but...
Well, can I ask you, what do you think about that idea of rapid bus systems? I mean, I've seen it before. I saw it in Las Vegas. I mean, yeah. It's basically a dedicated lane just for the buses, and it acts almost like a train.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying one way or the other, good or bad, but I mean, what do you think of that? Is that what we need, something like that?
Well, it works. Like, it has worked. Like, I was in Mexico City recently, and their BRT is excellent. And again, it's not to compete, like, should we do BRT? Should we do rail? Should we do this? Should we do that? At the end of the day, what's going to happen in the next 2 or 3 years? Are we going to continue to have this pie in the sky thinking we're going to be like, listen, if I could snap a finger, we'd have rail everywhere, right? Although there are a lot of places in our community that don't have the density to support it.
Right.
And that's part of why Metrorail is failing today. Metrorail never met its ridership sort of projections, right? So could we build rail everywhere? Yeah. Is it going to happen? Probably not. So it's sort of a matter of, like, we've had a history of broken promises in Miami, right? All the way since 2002 when we decided to tax ourselves. Even further back, Metrorail was supposed to be a 55-mile system. Are we going to keep making promises that we simply can't meet?
Can I also ask you about, because another controversial debate was the 836 extension.
Uh-huh.
And so they're voted for it, but this is, it's not something that's going to be started anytime soon. But what do you think about that? I mean, we're growing, we're extending.
Yeah. I mean, we were strongly opposed to the 836 extension. I mean, if you look at the 836 extension on environmental grounds, that should be enough. But if you look at it on transportation grounds, it's sort of proven in so many cities repeatedly again and again that building more highways does not relieve congestion. It's a very counterintuitive idea called induced demand. But basically, if, let's say forever, we keep building more highways and we keep building more roads, basically, we're going to be driving forever, right? And the number of cars will basically keep increasing and no one will have any viable alternative.
The mayor didn't buy that. He didn't like that argument.
I know he didn't like that argument. And to be clear, the mayor and we have many disagreements, right? And I think that's the interesting thing about the project that we have now is that regardless of the disagreements that we have, like, this is sort of the common ground that it just makes sense for everyone, right? If we have nearly 800 buses going around in circles, why can't we put them to the best effective use? If we have 25 municipal trolleys, also some of them going in circles, part of what we're trying to do on the bus marathon is hunt down the infamous City of Miami Flagami trolley. I'd encourage anyone to look up this route and see if you can figure this thing out. We're going to find it. We're going to get it. We're going
to
catch it.
Just real quickly, just to finish up in 30 seconds, if you could tell me, you know, is, because we're flat and we're a grid, is it an easy fix, do you think?
It is an easy fix. The thing is, good transit is not incredibly complicated, right? We all know what it is. Riders know what it is. You know what it is, right? I want to get there. I want to save time. I want it to be affordable. I want it to be reliable. That's not complicated. It's difficult to do, but we have a way to start.
All right. You know what? As I'm just going to bring you back in at some point, I want to hear about this 24-hour trip, and we got to talk about how to fix the system. Again, Azar Shoghlai, the director of the Transit Alliance. Remember, you can follow him online through his 24-hour bus ride. It's at transitalliance.miami/marathon or on Twitter, follow at Transit Miami. As, thanks so much, man.
Thanks so much.
All right, still to come, the Arts Center is hosting their winter shorts. We're going to talk about the growing popularity of short plays. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Again, thank you so much for your support to public radio. Well, the Arts Center's production of winter shorts could be the perfect experience for this crazy holiday season. I know we're all so busy. Also, the fact that it's probably good for many of our short attention spans. The 8 short plays, co-produced with City Theater, deal with stories about family, working around the holidays, and our very complex relationships with faith. It's the world premiere for local playwright Jessica Farr, who is behind the play, Hapless Disciples. Jessica, such a pleasure. Thanks for being here.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Also joining us in the studio are actors Irene Agin and Javon Jacobs. Right. Guys, thanks so much. I appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you for having us.
And you guys are going to give us a little bit of a show here in a second, so excited
cool.
about that.
Watch out.
Sneak peek.
You know what? For people who haven't been to a short play fair or production, I kind of want to get a sense real quickly from each of you of how you describe that experience for people. I mean, we're talking about, what, sketches, vignettes? I mean, how do you categorize what the experience is like for people? I'll go around the table. Irene?
I always tell people it's a collection of 10-minute plays, for the most part. They're all about 10 minutes. And how they differ from sketches or vignettes, I always think, is that they strive to have more of a beginning, a middle, and end, tell a full story, as opposed to just maybe just a funny little bit or something like that. They're usually a little bit more developed.
It's not a Saturday Night Live sketch.
No. Well, some of them maybe feel a little bit more like that than others, but they're also a little bit longer, you know, because like I said, they're more like 10 minutes. So,
right.
But they're all very different and varied. So there's, you know, something for everyone.
And Javon, how do you, like, if you're trying to convince some of your friends or family to go and they're like, wait, what is this? A 10-minute show? What am I watching?
You're not watching a full-length play, I'll tell you that. Which is usually the selling point of the shorts. You know, people like shorts, you know, because it's fast and it's over. Yeah. And even if you don't like the one you just saw, wait 10 minutes and the next one will appear.
And there's more.
And there's more.
There's, because it's a lot of different small little shows.
Exactly.
So you're going to get a very big, it's a buffet table is what
exactly.
it is.
And with winter shorts, there's the winter theme. It's the holiday theme, not just Christmas, but, you know, winter.
Exactly.
We have two Hanukkah plays.
Thanksgiving, you know, it's part of the season. So
there's
it's great.
A little bit of a lot of things. Jessica, this is going to be the premiere of your play. I wanted to get a sense of what inspired this show for you.
Oh, this show
because
in particular.
Because you're talking about the perspective of two mothers.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which I myself am not a mother, but this was a big year for a lot of my friends venturing into that journey. You know, for whatever reason, for me, this has been a year of feminine stories and just kind of deepening on stage the relationships between women, not having those relationships necessarily have to be about, you know, finding a partner or, you know, being necessarily nice and the ingenue, but just kind of discussing their fears and deeper discussions.
The other thing, the other thing too for you is that faith plays a part in your in your stories.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the characters in this play in particular, it takes place in a conservative pocket of Texas. So these two women are not being watched, not being, you know, criticized or questioned, and they're with someone they trust, and they're asking the deep questions, they're asking the real questions, you know. What do I believe in? Do I really think that this is how things should be?
See, I think about this, you know, this fascinating idea of a conversation between two women going into such deep issues, but you're doing it in a short play, in a very short period of time. As a writer, how do you do that? How do you build the character development that you need a lot of time to kind of expand on and get us to empathize with them? And you've got a few minutes.
Yeah, it's very quick. And it's a comedy, so it has to be funny, you know. But usually it's the voices sometimes come to me first, you know, or the big question. And I start with that question, that image, or that voice, and build from there. I mean, short plays are so immediate. You're just thrust into the action right away. And, you know, you want to be transported and you want to learn something new. In a very short span of time. So,
but as a writer, do you have a preference?
You know, I first started writing plays in the short format. The first play I ever wrote was a short play about two people on a blind date that goes horribly wrong. And I was at New World High School and I wrote that, and that was me experimenting. But yeah, I mean, it's a very different process than writing a full length play and taking someone on that journey. So
there are playwrights that they specialize in that because it is a different writing skill. I mean, there's people who do both, of course. Yeah. But no,
I'm not a specialist.
No,
I dabble.
Jessica does it all. But
what about for you, Irene and Joanne? What about for you when you're performing? I mean, I'd imagine, you know, you have less lines to memorize, but you've got to get us into the action very quickly, and you got to make us feel something for your character, and you don't have a lot of time.
Right. It usually then means making what we like to call like bold choices, or, you know, making very specific choices. And if the writing is good, which they usually, you know, they are in shorts, the writer does a lot of that for you. But you kind of have to just get to the point and be very clear about who these people are through every. You don't have time for them to get to know your character.
And so. I haven't even mentioned, by the way, Javon, is that you're playing multiple characters.
Oh, we all are. It's a true ensemble piece. Like, there's multiple plays. There's about seven plays. And we all have different characters throughout the program.
So, Jovan has a lot of lines, actually.
Like you said there's not a lot of lines. Sometimes there's a lot of lines.
I could feel him, like, next to me, because, yeah, he's got a pretty big load, because it's a compilation of in four different plays from five.
Yeah. But they handle it so well.
Yeah. And that thing you don't know, backstage, during the program, it's like a marathon. We are really sweating and running backstage, changing to go to the next scene. So there's, like, an adrenaline. When we enter the next scene, we kind of have that adrenaline to get us right into the next character, the next piece, because there's a lot happening backstage, and it's fast. It's a fast-paced show.
Let's talk about one of the plays that you guys are starring in, Fulfillment Center. This one takes us inside of a large commercial warehouse during Christmas?
Correct.
All right. Real quickly, you're going to perform a scene for us here, but just kind of set it up for us. What's going on?
Well, it takes place in, like you said, a big warehouse. Am I allowed to say Amazon-like?
That's okay. That's fine.
It is not Amazon, but an ish.
It's not a bad word. It's okay.
That kind of fulfillment center where people make orders, and we all types of products and things. And we're there.
Christmas Eve,
doing our job there. Javon is much more excited about it than I am.
All right. Well, you guys, I'll step aside. You're the actors.
All right. Hey. Hey there. Wake up. Dude, you can't be doing that on the floor.
No, what's happening? I'll move along, officer.
Hey, you're at work. Get your scanner.
Oh, crap. Where's my scanner?
Here. I'm up 300 already, and it's not even 6 a.m. Rise and shine. It's a beautiful day.
It's Christmas Eve.
Looks like you were in mid-pack.
No, this is not from the bins.
You can't have any personal stuff on the floor. They'll confiscate it.
Oh, but your energy drink is okay?
It helps my productivity. I'll H9 bin 36, by the way. You want some? I got another in a break room.
The loneliest place on the planet? No thanks.
Alex, what's your 20?
I copy. Row R, putting away some restock.
Getting ahead on break. Santa sees that. Remember to hydrate.
On it, amigo. That's a 10-4.
That dude is so annoying.
Who's Stuart? Oh, he's all right. He started off like us. They moved him up last week. He wants us to succeed.
He always asks how the job market is.
Just kidding. I know why you guys are here. That's why I'm here, too.
You think that's motivation?
All I'm saying is leave your pride and your personal life at the door if you want to last as an online warehouse worker. You gotta produce to survive. You newbies need to make 75% of our total picking volume target.
Is everyone as chipper as you?
I see people dropping all the time. I'm at 347, 36% above average. You know, you could work through, boost your numbers. No room for inefficiencies. Move as fast as humanly possible, you know? 800 items is only 52% of the goal.
And what happens when you make those goals?
More goals.
Exactly. You go ahead. I still show 5 minutes of break left.
That was a trip. That was fun. Again, talking with City Theater actors Irene Agin and Javon Jacobs, also joined by playwright Jessica Farr, all three part of the Winter Shorts at the Arts Center, happening now through December 23rd. You can see photos, by the way, of the production and find ticket information on our Facebook and Twitter at WLRN Sundial.
Yes, sir.
You know what? I wanted to ask and get a little bit more serious here for a second, but I'm curious as to the demand. And, you know, you have a lot of different theater options that you can go to. What do you see as the demand in shorts? Because I've seen different production companies around the area now trying to go towards that short performance. Jessica, is that kind of where we're going? Is it a fad? Is it just kind of the, I don't know. What do you see?
You know, I think there are theater companies like City Theater that has been around for 24 seasons now that is specialized in that. And that's what they do, and they do well, and that's what they've devoted themselves to. Now, as to say if that's a trend, I'm not sure. I mean, you know, we want to captivate our audiences, and things are moving quicker and quicker. So I would say it's convenient. It works. I don't see it as a threat to longer form pieces. I see it as playing with form, and yeah, it's exciting. I think the audiences get really into it.
All right. Irene, I mean, do you hear or do you see, I should say, audiences? Are they looking for one more than the other? What do you see, by the way, in attendance lately?
It varies. I think theater companies are always striving to cultivate a younger audience. I think a lot of the theaters have a bit of an older audience. I mean, that can be because they have the financial means to go more so, or we have a lot of people who grew up in New York who are used to going to the theater. A lot of young people, I'll meet people in their 30s who are like, oh, I've never been to a play. And you're like, oh my God, get yourself to the theater. Yeah. That's why a lot of theaters do have schools that come in to show, because to introduce them to theater.
And Javon, real quickly, I mean, it's why do you think young people maybe not into theater as much, and what would get them to want to come?
I think that's a selling point of shorts, like I said before, and it's short plays. Young people are usually, you know, they don't want to sit there for a long, full-length play, especially for someone who hasn't been to a theater before. So a short plays and a short program is a kind of good way to break them in, you know.
I want to get this from everybody. Jessica, let me start with you though. Is we talked about this on the program. We've seen cuts to the arts, and a lot of different groups around South Florida very concerned at those cuts and what that's going to mean. I've wondered, as a playwright, you have some freedom. As actors, you all have freedom. You can go different places, but what have you seen happen so far? Is it become an issue here in South Florida?
It's something we have to deal with. You know, there are a lot more exciting offerings in the arts down here, but where is the funding? You know, we are supported by Miami-Dade County and the Knight Foundation, and a lot of great opportunities still exist. But it can be a strain, you know, on the federal and the state level. We've seen that happen. So, you know, it's just keeping your head afloat and doing work with integrity that will engage audiences and challenge them, and that's all you can ask for, really.
Irene, I've heard from people who are worried that programs could go away because of this.
I know. I mean, I think if you asked any single theater producer down here, they would tell you they're I don't want to say struggling, and that might be accurate, but it's constant stress about that. And I would say the main thing is the slashing of government funding, because even though they have wonderful things like the Knight Foundation and donors, most of those things used to be matched by federal grants, by state grants, and the funding has been cut tremendously in the last handful of years. That changes, you know, that goes up and down, depending on the focus of the arts into administrations. But it is a very real concern for them, and they're doing what they can to stay afloat and try to ride that out till hopefully there's a change in that, because it does, you know, goes up and down with priorities. But it is hard. It is hard for arts organizations because you can only charge so much for a ticket. And most theater companies are not for profit. So they depend on donations, matching grants, funding. You know, you can't ask people. It's not Hamilton on Broadway. You can't ask them to pay $400 to come see Winter Shorts.
Yeah, you want to make your work accessible to the people.
Yeah, exactly.
Affordable.
Exactly. So as playwrights, as actors, I mean, what's it like right now trying to make it? Is it, you know... Is it difficult? It's always difficult, I know, but I'm just, you know, in the world we live in.
You're putting yourself out there. You're looking for every opportunity, you know, and lucky enough, City Theater is one of those opportunities for playwrights and produces playwrights all over the country, locally and nationally. So we've been very, I've been blessed to be a part of it.
You know
what,
in a short time here that we have, you know, what is the state of theater right now? Is this a good time, or is it kind of difficult? I mean, how would you describe it as a playwright, as actors, even as fans? Jessica.
We need to activate our audiences. We need to make them more engaged. I think now is the time for theater, as we're all so isolated and we're all very much disconnected, I think, in many ways, from each other, from our corporeal existence. I think, you know, being in a room with each other and breathing and sharing a dialogue and seeing what happens in the natural chemistry of the room, that's so vital.
That's
so.
You know, it's interesting. We live in a world of technology. I thought we were all connected, but we're not really connected, are we? Javon, what do you think? What's the state right now of theater?
Theater is a great art. I mean, it's been great. As far as in Florida, in South Florida, I mean, there's theaters. There's a couple.
I hear a good bit
of theaters.
I hear doubt.
But like we just spoke about, the funding is not really there. But there's still theaters trying to strive and produce good work and good content. And we're here, but we just need a little help, you know.
Irene, I'll give you the last word real quickly. I mean, for you, how are you feeling?
I think there is great quality in the theater that's being done in South Florida.
Definitely.
We just need people to go see it. Yeah. And they do, but we need more.
Get out of the house.
Get out of the house.
The
yes, we have Parents Day.
Everyone just, there's life outside of Netflix. Go to the theater.
I will be the first to say, it's been a long time since I've been on a stage, but I will say it. It is something magical about seeing something live. Go do it.
100%.
The first person to say that, absolutely. Again, talking with Irene Agin and Javon Jacobs, both performers with City Theater, also talked with playwright Jessica Farr. They're all part of the Winter Shorts at the Arts Center, happening now through December 23rd. Again, we have photos of the production. You can get ticket information on our Facebook and Twitter at WLRN Sundial. Guys, it's been a pleasure. Break a leg.
Thank you so much.
All right. And that's our program for today, this Thursday, December 13th. I'm Luis Hernandez. Have a great Friday, a great weekend. We'll talk again on Monday.